For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of, actually, this is where I normally say No Names All Game, but today I'd like to welcome you to the first edition of the No Names All Game / Utah Football Fans Podcast Extravaganza. My name is Chris. For the Utah fans, I'm Chris, joined here by my co-host Pat. Pat, how you doing?
Oh, great as always, but a little extra well today. You know, it's fun having guests on. I don't just have to listen to Chris talk the whole time. And not only do we get new guests, but a new team. And I don't mean a new team on the schedule, but just a new team for Penn State's history.
Yeah, absolutely. And for our Penn State listeners, we are joined by James, Gary, and Bryn. How are you guys?
Doing great.
Doing awesome.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were chatting a little bit here before we started recording. I was doing some prep for a Rose Bowl episode that Pat and I were going to record. And as I started like looking at, you know, your guys' schedule and team, I realized I don't really know anything about Utah football. So I searched on Twitter for Utah football podcast and you guys came up and here we are.
Perfect. Yeah, it's okay. The feeling's very mutual, so we don't know much about Penn State either, so we're very happy to be here too.
Awesome. So we will. We have a bunch of Twitter questions. Thank you to both of our Twitter followers for people who wrote in, asked us some questions. We'll talk about some matchups, some strengths, weaknesses, things we think about the team. We are going to start with an idea that Pat had, so I'll kick it to Pat in a second. But before we get to that, I am obligated to ask one question that I knew was going to be asked. One of our followers, Brandon, asked it, what is a Ute?
We knew that was going to come up. We just knew it.
Go for it, Bryn.
It's like the first question that's asked at any visitor. So yeah, Bryn, why don't you handle this one for
us? I'll answer that one. Well, so a Ute is actually a Native American Indian tribe. So the Ute Indian tribe from Utah, settled here in Utah. So the University of Utah Utes, that's where it comes from. And actually the university has an awesome working relationship with the Ute tribe, and they do all sorts of things with the tribe throughout the year, educational opportunities, things like that. They bring the tribe to different athletic events throughout the year. We get to see them come and do such an amazing like performance and dance at least once a year at a football game and then at all the other athletic events. So a Ute is a Native American tribe. And if you want more info, you can look at uteproud.utah.edu because they've got all the info there about the relationship with the university and the tribe and the history and all of that. So there you go.
That is always really cool.
Always the question that we always get. And I'm glad that you did pronounce it correctly because some people don't know how to say Ute.
How do they say it?
What do they say?
You get what's an Ute?
An Ute. Okay.
That's our Oregon fans right there. What's an Ute?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, that's really cool. That is not something I ever knew. I honestly, for most of my life, thought it was just like an abbreviation for the word Utah. So that is a much cooler story. Thank you for explaining that.
Okay, here's my question. What is a Nittany Lion?
I was hoping that would come back. Pat, you want to take this one?
Yes. So right outside of Penn State's campus is a mountain called Mount Nittany that used to be populated by mountain lions. And actually the last Nittany Lion is stuffed in the library.
Poor thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Not quite as cool as yours, maybe, as far as like, oh, we have a great relationship with the
well,
the
we do.
Tribe.
He's
around all the time. All right. So we've got the namesakes out of the way. Like I mentioned, we don't really know a lot. So Pat had an idea. Pat, why don't you kick it off with your topic to start us here?
Yeah. So I mean, this is a team that I think, you know, Penn State and Utah have never played each other. I'm going to guess that neither fan base is really think about each other all that often. We're across the country from each other in different conferences. And I feel like when, you know, other than like the huge brand names in football, the Ohio States, the Alabamas, the Georgias right now, teams that aren't in your conference, you just don't get to see a lot of what they do or what they're about. You know, you can look at the stat sheet, kind of get, you know, maybe whisperings on Twitter. The vibe I'm getting from Utah is actually fairly similar to Penn State. I feel like they play good defense. I feel like they're, from what I've heard, they're a very strong run blocking team. And I mean, Cam Rising, honestly, from if you look at the stat sheet, looks like a slightly better version of Sean Clifford to me. And that's kind of the only vibe where I'm going. They seem like a hard-nosed team. I got to watch the Pac-12 championship. They play very good defense. But other than that, I don't know a whole lot.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Same here. And I'll actually, I'm gonna add in one of the Twitter questions here. If you guys want to cover this later, we can kick it. But one from one of your Twitter followers, from Wild Ute, said, question for the Penn State folks: in their unbiased eye, who is a comparable Power 5 program nationally to Utah? Love to hear how other folks in other regions view the program. And as Pat came up to this of like, what's our perception? I liked that question because I kind of tried to think of like, all right, who do they remind me of or who do I think of them? And we got a lot of answers on Twitter. A lot of people were going Wisconsin, a couple mm-hmm. people going Iowa, which makes a lot of sense for us in the Big Ten. Both teams that are, you know, pretty good, have those years where they kind of break out, but, you know, could be in the middle of the pack. It doesn't really surprise you either way. So I think those are both good answers. But since everyone on Twitter already said that, I wanted to pick another one. So I started just looking at all of the different conferences, and I came up with Oklahoma State. And I don't know if this is fair, right, wrong, and different, but the reason I say this is because them, like Utah, is a team that I don't think about a ton, not for good or bad, just not on my radar. But when they're good, when they have double-digit seasons, I'm not surprised. I'm like, oh, yeah, they have talent. They could be good. They could put out double-digit wins. You know, for the Pac-12 for the last 10 years before you guys have won, you know, back-to-backs, congrats, by the way. It's been, what, Oregon, Washington, USC, Stanford. But Utah coming up and having this, you know, emergence doesn't surprise me. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. And when I was looking at the Big 12, that kind of did the same thing for me. Like, it's been Oklahoma, Texas for a while, you know, maybe sprinkling Baylor for a year. But like, when Oklahoma State has a 10-win season, I'm like, yeah, I mean, that makes sense. They're a good enough program. So that's kind of my perception of Utah is like, I know they're good. I know they can have those seasons of like big wins, get to the conference championship game. But I don't have a ton of reference outside of that. So would love to hear your guys' thoughts on Penn State in sort of the same vein.
Cool. Well, I guess I'll start. I mean, for just kind of the introduction of like who Utah is, right? So that Penn State fans kind of know who we are, and it all starts with the head coach. So Kyle Whittingham he's our head coach. If you don't know, he's been with Utah. He was our defensive coordinator when Urban Meyer was our coach, did the Fiesta Bowl. So, yeah, and then he took over in 2005, and he's been the head coach ever since. So, you know, the Sugar Bowl year that we did that, the transition to the Pac-12, and then everything since then, it's all been Kyle Whittingham. In our opinion, he's probably the most undervalued coach in college football. And where it all starts is defense. And so I think that's where, like, the Iowas, the Wisconsins, even the comparable to, like, Penn State, it starts with the defense, and that's where it runs. For a long time, it was like slugfest every game. I mean, Utah was, if we were winning, it was like 13 to 17. It was just bad. The last couple years, though, things have kind of flipped, and we've got an offense all of a sudden, and it's been great. So that's kind of a quick introduction to Utah football. I mean, it starts with Kyle Whittingham. It's tough, hard-nosed defense. They play very physical. If you watch the Pac-12 championship game, I think that was apparent. Like, they just bullied a team that has all the talent in the world, but just out physical them. So that's kind of my start. And Brandon Garrett, if you have anything to add.
No, I agree with that. So Kyle Whittingham or Witt is what we call him, Coach Witt, as James said. So he's the head coach from 2005 on, but the 10 years prior to that, as James said, he was the D coordinator. But the thing is, he's created quite a culture here, a nice family feel culture in the football program. And I think those who get into it really like it. But there's this continuity from year to year to year, and it's just developed over the years until we've got to this position. Though we've actually been in the Pac-12 championship game, was it 4 of the last 5 years? You know, the COVID year was in there, which is,
yep,
you know, whatever. I mean, the Pac-12 didn't really handle that very well, we don't think. But anyway, we've been in there. We lost a couple times. Then we've been back to back. So, but it does start with Coach Witt. And there's just this really great culture, which, though James said, is a hard-nosed type of football on both sides of the ball. The Pac-12 does have a lot of really high-powered, high-flying offenses. And it's really quite a contrast and a difference to Utah, where it's tough on both sides of the ball. Though this year we've averaged 40 points a game. So there's a good balance where we can play good D. And Utah is either one or two in all categories as far as defense goes, in the Pac-12 anyway. And so then you add their offense being able to score. Yeah, it's been a good mix.
Yeah, that's Brent. Great. I think that kind of, yeah, Brent, if you have anything to add, please.
No, I don't think I have anything to add to those, so we can get into more specifics later on.
Sure. So yeah, that's super helpful for us. Definitely confirm some of the things that we've heard, but would love to hear. We'll give you guys kind of the same response on what we think our program is, but would love to hear the outsider perspective first. What do you guys think of when you think of Penn State?
The whiteout.
Love that. Yeah. Good answer.
I mean, in all honesty, that's kind of the first thing I think of is the whiteout, which is awesome to see. So I'd love to experience it at some point, but that's kind of my first thought.
I don't know. I've watched Penn State my whole life, quite a bit on television. I watched the games this year against Michigan and Ohio State. So I've known of the success of Penn State. I've always respected the program as a top-notch program. And even this year, I mean, two losses, but it's to the two who are in the Final Four. So yeah, I've always had a lot of respect for Penn State. I've always felt like they've been in the mix, not just a, you know, bottom feeder, but they've always been, at least the way I've viewed it, is a top-notch program.
Yeah. I mean, I got to echo it. Like, I just think that Penn State's just, it's the history, right? They just got a tradition, a history. They're one of the first football programs that kind of comes out when you're talking about the longevity. They have, you know, all the history and notoriety, national championships, all that stuff that I think is a level that Utah hopes to get to. I think from what I've watched, they play a very similar brand of football. I think it's defense. You know, Coach Franklin, when he took over, I think he's done a great job. Personnel-wise, I don't really know. Honestly, I know a couple of the guys. You're in a similar boat to us where you've got injuries. You know, everybody does. A couple of guys opting out, that sort of a thing. But, you know, when I think of Penn State, it's the whiteout does come to mind. It's, I think, one of, if not the best tradition in college football. So that's pretty cool. And then just a hard-nosed brand of football. And I got to say, we did a poll earlier this year with our podcast. I'm not a fan of your guys' helmets. Just got to throw that out there. I it's rough.
I'm not in on that. I'm not in on that. I respect it. I like the tradition.
I like the tradition. But can we add something? It's just white. So
yeah,
I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I think, you know, there's some beauty in simplicity, but we do once a year. Started a couple years ago, we do something called the Generations of Greatness uniforms, where they add little factors of previous uniforms over the year. And one thing that I love that they do is they put a number decal on the helmet, spices it up just a little bit. I'm a huge fan of that. Yes, Brit, it's massive. You wow. Gotta see it. You gotta see it. It's crazy.
Uproar in the fan base.
You need to get some stickers. Get the stickers like Ohio State. What do you think about that? We've had a lot of debate on that, baby.
I don't personally love them, Pat. What do you think?
So I don't want Penn State to do it because it wouldn't work, but I think they're awesome. I actually, when I played football as a kid, we did them and I loved it. And I hated when I found out that it was an Ohio State thing, but, but I think it does look really cool.
Yeah. And Brent, to your point of like, oh, a number on the sticker or a sticker on the helmet. It is funny that you say that because there's a decent percent of our fan base that's like, this is an outrage. There's numbers on the helmets. Like, why change anything? Yeah. So like we say it tongue in cheek, but there are those people who are like, don't change anything. So
was there a period, because you guys don't do last names, right? Mm-hmm. You're kind of a, there was a period though that you had them and then yes. they've gone away. What, tell me the story of that.
That was the guys who stayed through the scandal period.
Yeah.
Essentially they were honored by like, no, you have okay. meant so much to this program, keeping it together through, you know, I mean, Chris and I were both yeah. in school when it happened. It was a terrible time okay. to yeah. be a Penn Stater. So it was kind of honor them through like, you guys deserve to have your names on this jersey because you don't even get bowl games.
Very cool. Okay. I didn't know that. That's neat.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, so to kind of respond to your guys' perceptions, I think you're all pretty spot on. Yeah, obviously the history, everyone knows Joe Paterno and the long history of Penn State. Myself and Pat, you know, I became a fan of Penn State when I went there for school in 2008. So of course I know the history of Joe Paterno and all of those years, but like, I'm not an expert or historian. But during those years, obviously the scandal happens. Bill O'Brien comes in, kind of keeps us afloat for 2 years. And that's when the names on the jerseys happened. He honored those kids that stayed with us. We had, they basically made a rule. This was way before the transfer portal, because of everything happening. They were like, yeah, anyone who wants to leave Penn State, go ahead. And we had people. We had Silas Red. He was a top running back, ended up going to USC. We had a couple other big names that left, and the kids that stayed and Bill O'Brien, those years were really paramount to like keeping it afloat. And then he obviously goes to the NFL, James Franklin enters. And that's been our identity for the last, 9 years now is James Franklin. The culture that he's built, he is huge on family culture. His meetings, it always starts with, I love you. It always ends with, I love you. He's very, very big on the family aspect. And as far as who we are, it's kind of similar. Defense has been a stalwart for a while. Brent Pry was our coordinator for a very long time. He's now the head coach over at Virginia Tech. Had a rough first season, but we're wishing him success as he moves on. And then offensively, it's been interesting. The first couple years, we had Christian Hackenberg and an offensive coordinator that didn't really know what he was doing. We weren't really moving a lot. Then you enter Trace McSorley and Saquon Barkley and Mike Gesicki and a bunch of these really big playmakers with Joe Moorhead as our offensive coordinator. And those were what I like to call kind of the glory years right now, 2016, 2017. We were finding our rhythm. We were having a lot of fun. He is now the head coach at Akron, I think. Is that right, Pat? And now we're, you know, the last couple of years, we've had some troubles. We had 2 years in a row, the COVID year and the year before, where just weren't good. You know, we had a 7-5 year. We had a, what was it, 5-6 year, the COVID year, something like that.
4-5.
There you go. Even worse. No. things were not very good. Coming into this year, a lot of people had it as, you know, this is a rebuilding year. We're in the 15th year of Sean Clifford's career. We don't really know what to expect. So to come out of this season 10-2 heading to the Rose Bowl, is really a testament to, I think, Franklin and what he's built and kind of getting the young talent on the field and persevering. And I'm rambling, Pat, what do you have to add?
Yeah. I think when you think about Penn State right now, like what Utah should focus on is kind of like the Sean Clifford era, which has been the past 4 years, but I you could kind of describe as a bit of like a turd sandwich on some nice bread. just two bad years in the middle there.
That's with good.
Some nice bookends. And yeah, this is a Penn State fan base that I think almost unanimously was thinking somewhere between 7-5 and 9-3 to come out of this season. We very unexpectedly came out 10-2 in the Rose Bowl, even bigger surprise. But there's a little bit of frustration there because we have zero ranked wins. We got beat badly by Michigan. And quite frankly, most of the fan base feels like we should have won that Ohio State game. I mean, it's a game we were winning in the fourth quarter with about 8 minutes left, and then it just got away.
Yeah.
So it's an odd mixture of, I guess, happiness and frustration. I will say this is a bit of like a not your grandfather's Penn State team. It's not like as great as the defense is, it's different than I think the traditional Joe Paterno defense. It's a fast defense. Manny Diaz is sending people all the time. He's creating pressure through blitzes. It's an offense that wants to be very explosive, but can't find that consistently. The passing game is good at times. At times it disappears. The offensive line is better than it has been in a long time, but far from being elite.
Are you confident in Clifford? How would you say you feel about him?
Ask me possession to possession.
I was going to say, is it quarter to quarter or possession to possession? Because we've been there. We know that pain. So, yeah.
I mean, yeah. You look at him on the stat sheet. He's pretty good. Like one of the things I've been, you look at Penn State's schedule and if there's more than three quarterbacks Penn State played that they'd rather have than Sean Clifford, I think you're lying as a fan, to be honest. But he's inconsistent. When he's bad, it's frustrating. It's ugly. And quite frankly, it's not what you expect out of a guy who's been in the program for 6 years, four of them as a starter.
Yeah, it's okay. Pat and I have been kind of on opposite ends of this year. Pat as the Sean defender, me as the vocal, like, hey, I love you. You've done a ton for this program, but I'm ready to move on. I think.
What is it? Five years? Has he been there 5 years?
Six.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah. Six. Yeah, because of the COVID year, he had an extra year of eligibility. So came back this year. Four of them as a starter. So he played for four. Four as a starter, and I think he had one his freshman year. He had like a couple of passes, but I think it's just for a lot of us who are on the side of like ready to move on, ready to get over it. It's just fatigue. Like I don't hate Sean Clifford. I think there's a ton of moments that he's made me very happy, and he's done really good things. It's just we've seen the inconsistencies, we've seen the struggles. So it's been kind of tough. And we actually have a Twitter question that pertains to this. So I'll pop it in here. This is from one of our followers, Saquon Kendall, said, "Does Cam Rising have a love-hate relationship with Utah the way Penn State fans do with Clifford? High level, they're similar when they seem like great leaders, but maybe haven't gotten their teams over the hump before these Pac-12 championships, of course. What's your guys' relationship with Cam Rising?"
I think we love him. There's a small portion of the fan base. I mean, you guys get it, right? Like the very passionate fan bases, right? Where you lose a game and it's burned the whole system to the ground, right? There is that portion. So, we lost to Florida earlier this year in a game where we all felt like we should have won. And, on the last possession, Cam threw an interception. And it was like, who's the backup? Pull Cam. He's terrible. Right. And then all of a sudden we go on this winning streak. And then at the end of the season, we lose to Oregon and same thing, right? This team goes how Cam Rising goes. I mean, if Cam's going, this team is virtually unstoppable in a lot of ways. I think the vast majority of Utah fans though love him. He is a gamer. Coach Whittingham has said that he's the most competitive guy he's ever been around, and Whittingham's been in locker rooms with, Urban Meyer teams and Sugar Bowl champion teams and some of these, teams for the last 20 plus years. And Cam Rising's the most competitive guy he's ever been around, which is really saying something. I love him. He's potentially coming back next year. There's rumblings. We don't really know. He has another year of eligibility. We'll say it this way. We're all praying that he comes back. That's probably the best way of saying it. We're all, doing our best to urge him to come back.
Yeah, I would agree with James. I think majority of Ute fans, and I think the three of us really like Cam. What people may not know this year that don't follow Utah football is he got hurt in the first USC game. When we played Washington State the following week, a half hour before game, he just couldn't go. And so he missed the Washington State game. And then he just wasn't, then he played, I think the next game he came in.
Yeah.
But he wasn't full steam. And you could tell he just wasn't the same guy. So he's incrementally got better right up until the championship game. And it almost feels like he's back to where he normally is because Cam Rising, I think he ended up ninth in the QBR nationally.
Oh, wow.
Until he got hurt, he was like, I don't know, four or five all the time. But then he got hurt and his numbers and stuff went down. But Cam's actually a dual threat guy. He can throw, but one of his greatest assets is that he can run the ball. And he'll run. He's not crazy. He's not one of those guys that runs all the time. But he'll make a play with his legs that it's critical. So I don't know, Cam. Yeah, James is right. Everything's going to really go through him, but I think he's got the support of the fan base. We kind of trust him. He's great.
I mean, one of the things about Cam is not just his talent, but his attitude. He's one of the most like positive, uplifting guys you'll see on the team. And like James said, everyone kind of feeds off of that. And like when you watched the championship game and he took that hit where his head got blown off.
Yeah.
He gets up, you know, he gets up and he's smiling. And even the announcer said, they're like, is he smiling? That's just Cam. Like he has so much joy when he's playing football. And that really has, it like bleeds down into the rest of the team and to the fan base. Like he's a really hard dude to not like, I feel like. Of course, there's going to be some fans. There always are, but he's a very likable guy. And we really hope he's coming back.
Peace.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting because I think, and I won't spend forever on this because Pat and I have talked about Sean Clifford for decades at this point. I think it's similar in the sense to us where even myself, someone who's kind of ready to move on. And for those that aren't super familiar with Penn State, the reason we're ready to move on, is we have a guy named Drew Aller, who's a true freshman. He was a five-star. He was the number one rated quarterback in the country last year. Coming out of high school, we found him when he was like a three-star early in his high school career, started developing. He ends up becoming the number one quarterback and we were able to hold on to him. We have not had that in a long time. The last time we had a really top quarterback was Christian Hackenberg. And, you know, for as much as we love him too, the wins didn't really correlate. So there's a lot of us ready to like move on to like the prince that was promised in this future five star. So I think that's where the frustration comes from. But to Clifford's credit, I mean, the kid is an absolute gamer. He is tough as hell. He has left his body on the field for Penn State over the last couple of years. Last year, one of our biggest problems was we were kind of cruising. And then in the Iowa game, he gets hurt and we have to put in a backup who has never seen the field before. We lose and we start kind of falling into this skid. Mm-hmm. This year, he's been mostly healthy. We've been able to get the young kid some developmental reps at the end of games. And for Clifford, he's been able to kind of as frustrating as times have been, he's been able to manage games a little bit more. And Pat, you can put your thoughts on top of this, but we have a running game this year for the first time in the last, I don't know, 5 years or so. It helps a lot to the point where the last 2 years, it felt like Sean was trying to do everything. He would scramble as soon as the pocket collapsed. He would get kind of happy feet. He would move around and it was really frustrating. I think this year we saw, and last year before he got hurt, we've seen a different version of him and we've seen sort of what he's capable of. But Pat, I know you're a pro Sean fan. What's your hope for Sean in his last Penn State game here, Pat?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, there's been a lot of talk this season about Sean became the program leader in completions, yards, and touchdowns, which a lot of people solely attributed to him being, you know, in the program for so long. What they like to ignore is he's actually the program leader in completion percentage too. So he's a good quarterback.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he is a limited quarterback. His pocket presence is not always great. And he just does not throw an accurate deep ball at the end of the day. It's not his strength. It never has been. There's been flashes of it getting better this year, but it's just not, it hasn't been there throughout his career. But yeah, like Chris mentioned, this year he actually has a good running game to lean back on. Whereas the 2 years in the sandwich that I mentioned, it was like he was being asked to beat the entire offense. And he's not that guy. He's a good college football quarterback. He's not elite. He's not, you know, he's not a game changer. He can win you a game. But he's not. He can't win you a national championship.
Is Chad Powers? Is Chad Powers going to suit up? That's what I want to know.
I sure hope so, man. We could use that. Think fast, run fast. Think fast, run fast.
Think fast, run fast. That was great. That was
the best, man.
Yeah, yeah. I love how I kind of love that Eli is like loosely associated to Penn State now.
Yeah,
like,
I know. They
had Keegan-Michael Key on the Manning cast the other night, Monday Night Football, and they were talking about how he does a James Franklin impression. And it's like, yeah, we got a couple of Penn State football legends right here, Chad Powers and James Franklin impersonator. So, All right. So we have a bunch of other Twitter questions. I think we'll kind of sprinkle them in as we go. But let's talk about this game a little bit. You know, this is the last true Rose Bowl, you know, between Big Ten and Pac-12. Next year, it'll be a playoff site. And then we move into a 12-team playoff. So I don't know about you guys. I think that's kind of cool. I think that means a little bit more for us, for our history. There was a question from one of your Twitter followers, Ute Mark, said, how big is this Rose Bowl game to the team and fans of PSU? With their storied program, are they as excited as Utah is being relatively new for us? I know Pat's excited because he lives in LA, but Pat, taking that part out of it,
nice.
How would you answer that question? Do you think Penn State as a fandom is excited about the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a trend of the last several years where like bowl games don't mean as much, which personally I think is silly. But I think this year it's going to mean more to Penn State fans than in years past, not only because is it the Rose Bowl, but this is Penn State's last chance at a ranked win for the season. Like, are we 10-2 because we played 10 mediocre teams, or are we 10-2 because we're good? And this is, you know, there's always going to be question marks with opt-outs and injuries at the end of the season, but like, it's a chance for Penn State to show that they are for real, like beating a legitimate team in Utah, a Utah team that embarrassed USC. Like, you win that game, it's hard to deny that you are a quality team.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's, I mean, it's the Rose Bowl. It's the granddaddy of them all, right? It's very fun. And I looked it up because I wasn't as familiar, you know, in the however many years it existed, Penn State's only been there 4 times. So we were there in 1923, which was actually the first one played in the Rose Bowl Stadium. The game existed a couple years before that, but that was the first one in the Rose Bowl Stadium. We lost to USC 14-3. Not great. We were there in 1995, got a win. And then we were there in 2009. We lost to USC. 2017, we lost to USC. So we're 1-3.
I remember that game. Wasn't that a high-scoring game?
It was. It was 52-49.
That was unbelievable game.
I was there. I was there for that one.
Great. Wow.
Even as a loss, I still think it's the best college football game I've ever been to. Interruption question. Are any of you guys going to the game? Anyone going to the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, we're going.
Yeah.
Amazing.
We're going to be there.
Amazing.
Your fan base like? I mean, well, as far as traveling, it's across the entire country, right? So outside of those lucky ones who live in LA and just get a drive down the street and sleep in their own bed, you know, Utah, it's about a 12-hour-ish drive. So we got a lot of people going. What is your feel from your fan base as far as buying tickets and going?
I think it's going to be an incredible showing. I was there in 2017 and we were playing USC. I mean, that's a home game for them. And the crowd was split pretty 50-50, honestly, which I did not expect. I was like, oh, it's going to be flooded with Trojan fans. Like, we're going to be the minority. And like, Penn State just travels. I went to a game way back when we had our bowl ban. Bill O'Brien set up a game for us in Ireland. I went over there for that. Dublin flooded with Penn State fans. So we travel very well. I would expect Utah to do the same, being, you know, semi-close, I think. I think this will be a good matchup where both fan bases are really well represented.
Yeah, I would expect this one to be pretty much a 50-50 split. Here's a good example. A friend of mine, their parents, they're a big Penn State family. They were just out here 2 weeks ago. They're coming again for the Rose Bowl.
Wow.
Okay.
That's dedication.
That is. Yeah. I mean, we were there last year. The three of us, we were there when we played Ohio State last year. And
nice.
I would say it was hard to tell because the colors were almost identical. So visually it was hard to tell, but it felt almost 70-30 Utah, kind of in that. So I didn't know if that was expect, but I do know Penn State, they travel, right? So it would be awesome if it was 50-50, if it was split. And half of it was red, half of it was blue. I think that would be an incredible atmosphere. It'd be the first time all year they've filled the Rose Bowl. Little shot at UCLA there. So.
Yeah, that's very true. Speaking of colors, the Rose Bowl Twitter account tweeted out earlier today, you guys will be wearing red, Penn State wearing white, with just kind of a simple rose logo, a little bit different from years past. I kind of love that. What do you guys think?
I like it. I like this. Simplicity of it. I don't want to be so big and massive. I like the simplicity of it. It looks cool to me.
Yeah. I'm glad we're wearing our reds. That's like our classic uniform. That's my favorite uniform is when we go all red. So, and it's going to be a cool visual, I think, on the field, hopefully.
Yeah. Agreed.
And I'm with you. Like the rose, I think the rose just looks really good. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure we retweeted. I'm sure you guys have too, but it's just a very simple rose and it's not too big. It's not the Alamo Bowl where it's like, you know, an entire shoulder piece or anything like that. It just, it looks clean. So I'm excited. It'll look really pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Cool. So let's pivot into some specifics for this game. You mentioned earlier, James, there's some opt-outs, there's some injuries. As of right now, seems kind of even. We have two guys out. You guys have two guys out. Very similar impacts as far as, you know, All-American cornerbacks and leading receivers. Tell us a little bit about, you know, Clark Phillips III and Dalton Kincaid and what losing them means for this game.
Who wants to take it?
I feel like I've been dominating. I mean, I'm happy to answer it. We've had two guys opt out. We're hoping that's kind of the end of it. Those were kind of the ones that we were holding our breath on, right? We didn't know, but we kind of expected. Kincaid, in our opinion, is the best tight end in the country. His opt out's a little different. Yes, he's going to go to the NFL, but he's been banged up.
Right.
He only caught, I believe it was four passes in the championship game for 80 yards. They were big, big catches, but he'd been banged up, so he's opted out. Clark Phillips, who is an All-American cornerback, projected first-round draft pick, he opted out as well this last week. That one was a little bit more like we were holding our breath, like, hey, will he stay on? You know, because last year we had guys who went in the first round, and they played in the Rose Bowl, so we were hoping that would be a similar situation. Tremendous corner. One of the best in the country, you know, he'll be a first round draft pick. Outside of that, that's about it. Everything else, as far as we know, everyone should be healthy and going. So what about you guys?
Well, let me just say that the interesting thing, we do have actually our leading rusher is Tavion Thomas, but he, it's been a rough year for him for a number of reasons, but he didn't even play in the championship game. He opted out and said he's preparing for the NFL or whatever. So he hasn't really been a huge factor, though. He was still our leading rusher through the year. So he's not going to be playing. And then these two, hopefully no one else does. But the interesting thing with Kincaid, we started the season with Brant Keithy. He was our number one projected, I think, All-America. And then he got hurt. And so Kincaid has just picked up and just been – so then he became a third team All-American. So now we're on our third tight end who's a ex rugby player or something like that, but he's, you know, he's very aggressive. He had a big play in the championship game. So hopefully he can pick up, but yeah, losing Clark Phillips, you know, no one threw his way. Most of the time, no one threw his way. Even USC tried it a couple of times, but he is what he is and he's great. So it'll be a factor. But as of right now, that's where we're at.
I feel like something to note with Utah, I mean, we've talked about it. We are such a defensive team. Our defense is extremely young this year. Majority are freshmen and sophomores. We lost a ton of dudes to the NFL last year. And so Clark Phillips really was the anchor guy for defense. And we've got other guys who are juniors and have the experience, but majority of them are freshmen and sophomores. Now, they start off the season a little bit shaky. They've really come into their own. I think you could see that at the championship game. But the loss of Phillips, I mean, it's going to have an impact because, again, like Gary said, nobody would throw in his direction because he would make the play. So it's going to open things up a little bit. But hopefully our young defenders can step up and fill that position.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's kind of similar for us. And I'll let Pat talk about our guys in a second. I was actually surprised. So like I mentioned, I didn't know a lot about Utah, but first time I really heard about Dalton Kincaid was when the finalists came out for the Mackey Award and a bunch of college football experts were like, how is he not even invited? Like you look at his numbers. Yeah. I mean, 70 receptions, 890 yards, 8 touchdowns. That's a big part of your guys' offense. Do you feel like there is, you know, another playmaker, whether it be a wide receiver or someone that can kind of, you know, you can't replace that obviously in one game, but is there someone else that you feel fills that role, or does it change how you run your offense? What impact does that have?
I don't,
you know, as Gary mentioned, oh, go ahead. I've been talking a ton, so go ahead.
No, but what I was just going to say, I don't think it's going to change the offense. We'll run what we're going to run. And we don't have our whole offense is we don't like have one guy, like one receiver and one running back. And those are the two guys you got to focus on. It is really is a committee most of the time, though there's always a few guys that are the main guys, but they're not like some teams. It's just one guy and you're going to ride them. Yeah. And that's in the championship game. That's what it was is Kincaid. He was playing hurt. Like James said, he had just a series at the end of the first half that was he made some big plays, but he was really not a factor after that. And then, so Yasmin is his name, the other tight end. He's just going to have to step up. I think they're going to use him just like they've used Kincaid. Yep. And as far as our receivers go, it's just a committee of guys. And hopefully who's ever hot on that, hopefully at the Rose Bowl, the ball will get to him.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to change a thing. I think we'll just play it how we play it. The guys are going to have to step up. I mean, that's kind of one of the mantras of Coach Witt.
Yeah, next man up, right?
Yeah. I know it's a cliche, but that's what hopefully you have depth. That's what they're supposed to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I mentioned, as of now for us, it's two guys as well. It's Joey Porter Jr., who's similar to Clark Phillips, is an All-American corner, projected first round. And then Parker Washington, who is our leading wide receiver in yards and catches, at least not a ton of touchdowns, but in yards and catches. He suffered an injury towards the end of the season. He missed the last couple of games, and he actually just declared for the NFL draft as well. So, Pat, why don't you give the Utah fans a little bit of insight onto what missing these guys is going to mean for us?
Yeah, I mean, it's always tough to replace a Joey Porter Jr. I think when it comes to Penn State, it's not so much the high-end talent that they can't reproduce there, because they have Kalen King as their second cornerback, who's been really excellent, is a guy who coaches think like in a year or two could be better than Joey Porter Jr. But you get to your third cornerback, and we've got right now probably Johnny Dixon, who's been a nice surprise and has been good, but, it's different than having two top-end corners on the field at all times with the third guy rotating in and out. But I still think Penn State's pass defense is going to be pretty close to elite without Joey Porter Jr. out there. Parker Washington is a bit of a tougher blow for Penn State to swallow. Mitch Tinsley has been very good, but it's tough to operate in an explosive offense with one legitimate threat at wide receiver. Keandre Lambert-Smith had a good last game of the season. He's a guy that Penn State fans have been waiting to break out since he's come here for the past 2 years. And you kind of hope that was the precursor to that happening. He did some things getting to the ball and being physical you hadn't seen from him before this. And so as a fan base, you got to hope that, that's the tone for the rest of his career. Outside of that, it's also Olu Fashanu, their starting left tackle, guy who decided to come back this year, but was a projected first-round pick. He's been hurt for the past few games. Not sure if he's playing in the bowl game or not. It's very unclear. James Franklin likes to play that tight to the chest. Penn State is sneakily banged up, man. Their starting left guard from the season is out. It's been kind of like low profile injuries, but I think overall they're in a pretty good place going into a bowl game compared to most teams in the country in terms of guys actually playing.
So let me ask you this. So this is in the Pac-12. So Utah defensively was number one against the rush and number two against the pass. So their defense is good. What would you say the strength of Penn State is as far as offensively? Is it the passing game, the rushing game, or is it just the balance between both? Because Utah's D has been pretty good since midseason anyway, to where they're one and two in those categories. So what can we look at would be the biggest threat for us or their defense?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the first thing that comes to mind, I mentioned it earlier, is we have a running game. for the first time in a long time. The last couple of years really struggled. And this year we have two true freshmen in Nick Singleton and Katron Allen. Nick was the number one running back in the country, Pennsylvania guy. We were very happy to keep him. Katron was a four-star guy who we expected to be good. Don't think we expected to be this good this quick. Both of those guys had 1,000+ scrimmage yards this season. Wow. Nick had 12 touchdowns and Katron had 10. So those two guys combined have given our offense a spark that we just lost for a couple of years. I mean, really, you look back to like Saquon Barkley, Miles Sanders era of running backs. After that, you know, we had a flash in the pan with Journey Brown. He had a couple of really nice moments, but then had to retire for some medical issues. And then it was just really, whether it was the running backs themselves, whether it was the offensive line, we don't need to get into that, but it really slowed down. These two kids came in this year and just took us by storm. The first couple games of the year, the Auburn game, the Ohio game, Nick Singleton's breaking off like 70-yard touchdown runs. And you're like, holy crap, this kid is good. And then Katron Allen comes on through the year and he's more of, so Nick is more of the fast breakaway. He'll get to the edge and just beat you. Katron's a guy who will run through the tackles and run over you. So it's really like a nice little thunder lightning combo that, like I said, has taken some pressure off of Sean Clifford, made the passing game a little bit easier to navigate when we don't have, say a superstar at wide receiver. You know, in past years, last year was Jahan Dotson. He was a first round pick, really, really good. Before that, KJ Hamler. Before that, Chris Godwin. And, you know, there's a lot of wide receivers that we've seen where it's like, that's the guy, you can throw it up and he's going to get it. This year, Pat mentioned Parker Washington was very good. Mitchell Tinsley was very good, but we didn't really have that like super dynamic passing offense. I think Brenton Strange, our tight end, was probably one of our most dangerous weapons in the passing game. But I think to answer your question, and Pat, you can add on here, I think it's the running game that has really put us over the top this year.
Yeah, if I have to lean one way, I would lean towards the running game, but I think it is the balance that makes Penn State dangerous. You know, I think they average about 180 yards a game on the ground, which is very good, but it's not something you look at and go like, oh my God, how are we going to stop that? Same thing in the passing game. It's about 250 a game. It's good, but you're not going, oh my. But, if they can get both of those things firing, it's very difficult to defend both at once. But if you can totally shut down one of them, it does get very difficult for them to move the ball. Yeah. And you'll see some three and outs and things like that.
Cool. Yeah, I think that. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the Pac-12, I mean, every league is sort of this way, but the Pac-12 definitely has some wide open offenses. And of course, last year when we played in the Rose Bowl against Ohio State, their offense was out of its mind. You know, they were throwing the ball all over the field. So this will be a different play for us, particularly from last year. And I'm trying to think. I mean, Oregon State is not as good as Penn State, but they play more this, I think, the style of play, at least it sounds like to me, that Penn State does. Penn State and Utah, it just appears to me, has a very similar philosophy offensively. That balance.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. That was another question we have here from one of your followers, Jake L. Said, how well do you think these teams match up? What will be Penn State's biggest mismatch? And what do you think Utah's will be? So I'll ask to you guys, do you think there's an area where you feel like you have a very clear advantage, a mismatch that you'll be kind of relying on? Is there anything that you're looking at as like, this is our key to really putting on a great performance?
It's hard.
Go, James. Go.
I was going to say, it's challenging, right? When you talk about mismatches, right? You look at, hey, what's their defensive line versus offensive line? All those different categories. It's hard because, we don't really know your team all that much. From what you're saying, it's very similar. Like, we run the ball to set up the pass. As the season's gone on, we've had some wide receivers step up. Jalen Dixon, number 25, you'll see him. Fast, speedy guy. Another guy, Money Parks. Yeah, his name's Money. It's pretty awesome. He's kind of starting to come on as the season. Yeah, and he's starting to flash, right? He's kind of a young guy. He's starting to flash. We use the tight ends a ton. So, Yasmin. Gary mentioned earlier, though, with the run game, Tavion Thomas was the guy. And last year, he was a huge part of the offense. This year, it kind of slid off. He's no longer with the program. He's going to the NFL, hopefully. So what's happened is there's a guy, Makai Bernard. He's been with the program for a few years, but he really is kind of the pass catching, you know, he's kind of that third down sort of a style running back. Number three, you'll see step in is Jaquindon Jackson. He started off the year at Utah as our backup / third string quarterback. So he was a quarterback to start the season, and he has now come in and really taken over that kind of power run running back position, which has been, we've needed it, and thankfully he's kind of stepped in for there. So it's really funny. It sounds like we're going to be very similar, right? You run the ball to set up the pass. You kind of question who's going to be the pass catcher to make the big play. If you can run the ball and establish it. So they're very mirror image teams, which I think will make for a very interesting game, in my opinion.
Yeah, I actually have a follow-up on that based on kind of how you're talking about your offense. Something Pat and I have talked about for many years with Penn State's defense, especially under Brent Pry in the past, our identity was bend, don't break, right? We would let up some plays here and there. We'd let up some big things, but we would close the door in the red zone, not let up as many touchdowns. This is Manny Diaz's first year as defensive coordinator. Like Pat said, he's a little bit more aggressive. We have a lot of youth on this defense. We've seen the emergence of some really, really talented young guys. Abdul Carter wearing number 11, which is very prestigious to Penn State football. That was Micah Parsons and LeVar Arrington and some other greats.
Oh, wow.
He's a true freshman and led the team in sacks, was up there in tackles, plays like he's a chicken with his head cut off, just running around making plays. It's really, really fun. But with that youth comes some of that same bend, don't break. So I was sorry if my eyes were darting. I was looking at the stats. Scoring defense, we finished the year top 10. I think we're tied for 9th or 10th, letting up 18 points a game. And you factor in Michigan and Ohio State, that's a 41 and a 44, tough games to kind of add to that number, but it is what it is. But when you look at the red zone defense, that's kind of really where we thrive. We finished number 7 in the country, allowing conversions 71% of the time, mostly field goals, 7 touchdowns, 11 field goals. So I guess my question to you is, with your offense and some of the things that you've mentioned, do you think you're going to be looking at more of like methodic drives, kind of trying to beat us down and convert once you get to that red zone? Are there more of the explosive plays where, you're going to try to beat, the man on man or the deep zone? Where do you think you might be able to take advantage of a bend, don't break style defense?
Well, we're typically not big play. It's a big play offense. I know in the championship game, we had some massive plays, which we were loving. But yeah, that's not the typical style. That hasn't been typical the whole year. You want to have more of that. We wish we did, but it just isn't that way. We have them, but it's some teams, every drive they have a 40-yard play, it feels like. So, but that's not Utah style typically. It's more, control the clock, move the ball. It just sounds like the red zone's going to matter. Get to the red zone. And honestly, our kicking game has been marginal this year.
At best.
And so that is a worry for me anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where we've got into the red zone or close to it, like the 25 or something, and we've gone for it instead of maybe would have kicked.
Wow. It's okay.
So we've had, some good's come out of it and some bad has come out of it. So, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know offhand what our stats are in the red zone. I'd have to look that up. I don't know what it is. It feels like, I don't know. I mean, I can think of some games where it hurt us. We didn't score when we should have. And then other games we did really well, like 6 out of 6, stuff like that. But I don't know over the season what it is, unless one of you guys know.
I have no idea. No, I don't know. But I didn't know that. I mean, that bend don't break mentality, right? You kind of give up between the 20s, and then once it gets inside that 20, you hold them to a field goal that's considered a win. As the season has progressed, Utah have gotten significantly better. I don't know the exact statistics. I was actually looking at them the other day. To start the season, I mentioned the Florida game, right? Like, we had a couple of opportunities within the 3-yard line to punch it in. Couldn't do it any time and ended up losing the game by 3 points. So that has been a focus. ever since that, and it's gotten progressively better. But you're right. I mean, we hit the 25-yard line. It's 4th and 4. That should be a guaranteed kick a field goal, go off, you get 3 points. That has been a concern and could be a factor in this game if, you know, we get to the, you know, 13-yard line, but are we sure about the kicker? I don't know. That could definitely play a factor in this game.
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm looking up the stats right now. So Utah is 82% red zone conversion on the year. 20 pass touchdowns, 30 rush touchdowns, 8 field goals. So it looks like when you guys are getting there, you're punching it in pretty good. And 70 red zone attempts. That seems a lot. So it seems like you're getting there pretty often. You know, when I was looking at red zone defense, I think, you know, we had far fewer times that we've let the opponents get there. So I think that'll be really interesting. Yeah. We've given up, we've had 39 attempts in the red zone, you know, where we've allowed 10 rushing touchdowns, 7 pass and 11 field goals. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's, maybe I should have done some research before we started this. I could have had that offhand. I could have had that ready. But yeah, that maybe is a little bit of a key to the game. So, I've been rambling and talking a whole lot. Do you guys have any questions, any thoughts, anything you want to discuss? I apologize. I tend to do this. Pat has to suffer with me most weeks, but I would love to hear what's on your mind.
Well, yeah, maybe we've answered this, but what do you think is the key for Penn State to win? Is it a player? Is the offense, well, stupid, but is there a particular, yeah, what's the factor? What for you to win the game? It has to happen, you think, to win.
To be bad, take it away.
So, I mean, I think it's going to, like, it's hard to put this in the right way, but I think, like, what worries me the most, I think if Penn State plays good in the trenches, I think they can win this game. I think on the back end, not that I know a ton about Utah's back end, I think Penn State's top tier back end of their defense. And Utah really worries me up front on both sides. You're talking about a line that I think is only giving up like 9 sacks all year. And Penn State likes to get to the quarterback, man. So like, you know, if they can't do that, it could be a long day. But I think if Penn State gets pressure in Cam Rising's face, and I think if they can stop Sean Clifford from being constantly under fire, I think things tilt towards Penn State.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think getting to the quarterback has been so clutch for us. I mean, I think it was the Maryland game. Everyone was telling us to watch out for Talia Tungavailoa, and you know, he might surprise us and he might upset us. And we sacked him like 3 times in the first, like, I don't know, 15 minutes of the game or something like that. And we were just nonstop, relentless. And he had, you know, one of his worst performances of the game. Not to compare Maryland to Utah. I think Utah's a far better program. But just to kind of give you an example of when we're at our best, we are getting to the quarterback and really disrupting. Pat said before, I have a ton of faith in our secondary, even without Joey Porter Jr. We missed him for a couple of weeks this year. He actually had appendicitis and came back like a week and a half later, which blows my mind how these athletes do that. But for the, I think it was 2 games that we missed him, you know, the defense stepped up and our secondary still looked pretty good. But, you know, to Pat's point, if Cam Rising has time back there and he's able to, you know, really analyze the field, go through the reads, a secondary as good as they are can only hold up for so long. So I think pressure is key. And then for Clifford on the other side of it, I'll hammer, this is super obvious, but it has to be limited turnovers, like one or less turnovers. That's what kind of killed the Ohio State game for us. We were leading in the fourth quarter. You know, everyone wants to look at it and be like, oh, they let up 44 points, the defense must have sucked. We held Ohio State to 16 through 3 quarters, and at the time they're averaging 50. The defense was playing lights out, and then we have a couple really unfortunate plays where, you know, blame it on Clifford, blame it on the Ohio State DN having the game of his life. But there was, you know, three interceptions and a fumble recovery, all out of his hand that ruined the game. So I think that's the key for me is protect the ball and don't beat ourselves. But I'll ask that same question to you. What's the key for Utah? I didn't mention this at the top. I don't know if you guys are gambling folk, but I love gambling. I always look at the lines. Right now, Utah is a 2-point favorite with the over-under at 52. So they're expecting a pretty close game. What do you guys think the key is for you guys to win and maybe cover that 2 points for the degenerates like myself out there?
What do you think, Bryn?
Yeah, Bryn, give us your thoughts. We've been talking the whole time.
Well, I mean, I think it's, I don't want to steal, Pat, your answer, but we always talk about the game is won in the trenches. I mean, it really is. And that's especially true for Utah football. And we've had our struggles. We've had our really good games. So it really is just going to be basically everything you said, Pat, just kind of the reverse. So if we can protect Cam the whole time, then I think he's going to have a really good game. And then the other way, if we can get to your quarterback, which Utah tends to do, I mean, we're good at that, but it really is those two lines, who's going to step up and make the big plays and make the big stops too.
I mean, I think we had 38 sacks this year. I don't know where that ranks with anybody. I don't know what Penn State got, but we had 38 sacks and I think 12 interceptions and 12 fumbled recoveries this year. Recently we've been able to get to the QB, and with Caleb Williams, we really got to him. Now, was he limited with some injury? Apparently a little bit, but we helped him with that injury, but we got to him, but we knew how to play him on. So it's going to matter in that regard, the pressure. But again, I'll go back. I think I said this earlier, but with like Cam, and we've said this all along throughout the year, is when he has the ability to run, he does it at pertinent times, which makes some big plays. And if he can do that, it's going to be a big factor in this game. I think he has to do it if we're going to win, because I feel like there's going to be that pressure on the line. And at some point, he's going to have to make a play with his legs, and he does have the ability. And when he's healthy, he does it. And we missed that for a period of time in those games where he was hurt. And to me, anyway, I could tell. So if he's able to do that, that will be a factor in the game. It was big against Ohio State last year. He made some big plays.
Yeah, that was a close game. Going. That was a real close game. Yeah. Looking up some of the stats, so you are correct, Gary. Yeah. 38 sacks. Go ahead, Pat.
If Gary was right on all those stats, and if you want these teams to be any more similar, Penn State, 37 sacks, wow. 12 interceptions, 12 fumble recoveries.
Oh, no kidding.
It is. It's crazy. Like, they're mirror teams. I mean, it's...
They got
that's
a lot
amazing. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's funny, Pat. That's exactly what I was looking up. We're on the same page. We're on the same page. but yeah, the edge does go to Utah. You mentioned only let up 9 sacks this year. Penn State has let up 18. Similar in a lot of areas. Maybe that's one where Utah has the edge. But that's very funny. 38 to 37 and the turnovers being pretty similar. Pat. Yeah. All right. What else you guys got? I think we've covered a lot of ground here. Bryn, you have anything?
I want to know, kind of moving away from Rose Bowl a little bit, I want to know how Penn State feels about USC and UCLA coming your way.
Yeah, good question.
great question. Wow.
I'm really excited because it means Penn State's going to be out here every couple of years. So I'm hugely
That's
excited.
True.
There you go.
And I actually just got a notification that, you know, there was some drama whether the UC Regents would approve UCLA that just happened. They approved.
Oh, nice. Breaking news.
Did they really? Okay.
Yeah.
Really
good. It's going to cost them a bunch of money, I think. But, you know, like everything else in California, they're going to get taxed.
You pay up, you can go.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like in the war of the conferences that sort of opened up between, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC, it feels like the Big Ten has taken a lead now because, I mean, Texas was okay this year and Oklahoma was god-awful. USC has bounced back nice with Lincoln Riley, and UCLA out of nowhere was very good.
Yeah.
So it looks promising.
Yeah, I think personally I'm excited for it because one of the biggest gripes in the Big Ten for a lot of fans has been the way that our divisions are set up. In the Big Ten East, you've got Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State, all in the East. Michigan State, not very good this year, but they've had their moments. It's really hard to get to the Big Ten championship game. You have to beat Ohio State and Michigan every single year. doesn't matter. And then on the West, you have an 8-5 Purdue team getting in. You have Iowa, Wisconsin, who, you know, have crappy years and they get in. So I'm hopeful that when USC and UCLA join, they'll reevaluate that, redo the divisions, get rid of divisions, do something to change that. So that I think, I mean, obviously, you know, you love competition. You have a chance every year to get more ranked wins, play good teams. You know, as Pat mentioned, that's kind of one of the knocks this year is nobody in the Big Ten was really that good outside of Ohio State and Michigan. So, you know, those were our two losses. All of the wins that we had, none of those guys ended up ranked. So if we have an opportunity to play some good, you know, Southern California teams and you know, have a maybe a different path to a Big Ten championship, I think that that helps us a lot.
How do you guys feel about it as Pac-12 people?
We're not happy about it.
Yeah.
You guys aren't happy about eventually joining the Big Ten? Come on.
We'd do it.
We
would do it.
Let's go. Like, that would be great. Yeah. Like, when you take the marquee program, USC, who, you know, they've been down, but they're still USC, and this year showed it, and you take them and you send them off, and then UCLA – still a big brand, right? They're still UCLA. And then the talk is we'll replace them with, you know, San Diego State or pull somebody maybe from like the Big 12. It just doesn't have the pull, right? And so, yeah, I don't like it personally. I would love to join forces with another conference. There's a lot of talks and that sort of a thing. But you know, from a selfish standpoint, I think it sucks. I hope that they lose a lot when they're in your guys' conference. Because now, you know, they're going to be playing Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State in November when it's snowing sideways and it's, you know, 21 degrees. My only thing is, I was looking at your guys' conference and it almost seems like all the good teams over here and then like maybe one or two. Just get rid of them. That's the Pac-12 this year. They got rid of the divisions and it was awesome. I mean, the games came down to the last game. Utah would not have made the conference championship in the old style. It would have been Washington would have gotten in. So it would have been, you know, we obviously benefited from it, but we talked about on our podcast, like that has been one of the better changes. Just get rid of them. You guys have the 14 teams. The best two teams will play in the conference championship game. And that's how it should be, in my opinion. So,
amen. Amen. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. The West has never won a Big Ten championship.
That's wild.
Really?
They won one. It's only been 6 years, but they're 0-6 or 0-7, whatever it is.
It's amazing.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's embarrassing.
Gary, what do you guys think about the USC and UCLA?
I mean, there's no love lost here with USC especially. But I think right now it's just the unknown for us because we don't know where our conference is going to land. And so hopefully it'll be a beneficial thing. But right now we're kind of just, we don't know what's going to happen. So losing those two marquee teams, it hurts. And especially as Utah fans, I mean, we're the newbies in the Pac-12. It's only been 11 years that we've been there. So for us to kind of now be in a place where maybe the Pac-12 is not going to be as strong as it was, or maybe it's going to be better. Who knows? We just kind of don't know right now. But we were all shocked when the news came out. And I still don't quite understand how the travel is going to work with all of those teams, not just football, but all of the other athletic teams.
Generate money.
That is rough to travel cross country and all of I mean, I don't know. So it's interesting. I mean, we're not fans of USC. We just don't love the attitude with them, but hey, we've beat them down the last three times we've played them. But I don't know. Hopefully it's going to be a good thing for Utah and for Pac 10, 12, whatever it ends up being. But until we know what's going to happen, it's just kind of hard to be in the unknown.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
I echo what they say. Essentially, I just it's fun playing them. So I'm gonna miss that. That's really what it comes down to. But the truth of it is, if we're honest, is that if we were invited, we would have gone. So
sure,
that's, you know, I think, but I yeah, we would have gone.
I hope.
I think Utah would be a great addition.
Yeah.
I mean, football team very much on the rise. solid. I mean, the Big Ten is a little different in the SEC in that they care about the academic institution itself. Utah, yeah, solid academically. I think it's a win.
Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
All right. All right. Give him a, let's give him a call.
I'll get Kevin Warren on the phone.
Yeah. Give him a call.
Pat's got a petition for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Predictions?
I think ooh, there's nothing left to do but get some predictions here. So, like I mentioned, Utah is a 2-point favorite. Over/under is 52. I won't hold this to you. You know, there's a couple of weeks. Maybe there's some more opt outs. So you're not locked into this forever. But as of today, December 14th, knowing what we know, what is your prediction for the final score of this game?
It's 38-31 Utah.
Okay.
Gary's taking the over by a pretty good margin then, because that is a pretty low over/under. I mean, that's – but they're both seems like very defensive teams. I think it's going to be more like 35-27 Utah. I think it's some more points, but I think Utah pulls it out, obviously. I mean, good grief.
Yeah, I'm kind of more in like the 32-28-ish range for Utah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, we're all kind of similar. I'm pretty close to James. Shocking, I have Penn State winning it.
Sure, yeah.
I have Penn State.
I would hope 30, so.
Yeah, yeah, I got Penn State 34, Utah 28. I think it's a close game either way. I think this is one of those ones that probably comes down to, you know, who's got the ball last or who makes the most of the last 6 minutes of the game, something like that. So I got 34-28. Pat, what do you got?
I think with a couple of key offensive weapons missing, this could be lower scoring than our fan bases are used to. I'm going Penn State 24, Utah 21. And after what you guys told me, Penn State wins on a missed field goal by Utah.
Oh, God. I will lose.
No,
you will hear an explosion in the stadium. It's my head. I'm telling you, dude, if that transpires,
I owe you guys a drink if that happens.
That's right.
You, I don't drink, but you'll owe me a drink, and I'll take it, because yes.
Oh, man.
I can see it happening.
You know what? It sounds like we're going to have a fun game either way.
It'll be good.
Yeah, so we'll wrap up there. James, Gary, Bryn, thank you guys so much. To all the Utah Football Fans podcast listeners, thank you for letting me and Pat come chop it up with you guys. Hopefully we provided some information, some entertainment, and really, really looking forward to this game, guys.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it very much. It's good.
All right, talk soon. See ya.
Bye-bye now.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.